You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Energy, mass, life, shaping life, mind, God, shaping God. Consider, we're born not with purpose, but with potential. Good morning and welcome to our service of worship, and especially warm welcome to those worshiping with us for the first time today. Your presence enriches us. My name's Jenny Dyster and I'm the current president of the Committee of Management of this church. I will lead the service today, casting that particular role aside in favour of my queer identity. Today's service was advertised in Feast because it is especially dedicated to LGBTQIA plus people. We welcome everyone here today. You're allowed to be straight too. I just thought I'd reassure you on that point. We welcome everyone, and that means everyone, as we do every week, regardless of whom you love, how you identify, and what your own beliefs are. We welcome you here on behalf of the generations of seekers of truth and meaning from all over the world who've worshipped with this fellowship since 1854. The roots of this place go deeper, for this land that we meet on today is the traditional land of the Kaurna people. We respect and bless their spiritual relationship with their country and their elders past and present. Unitarians are a spiritual community, unattached to creeds or theology. It doesn't matter if your background is atheist or Jewish, Buddhist, Muslim, Christian, Sikh, Baha'i. Our brief is to support you in seeking and following your own spiritual path. If you find our core principles compelling, there are all ways to make the world a better place. Hopefully, we'll see you here again. And those core principles are on the banner as you came in. Do you know who this little guy is? It's a little bloke, cisgender, unambiguously male since birth, that is, literary birth, a bit like a white hippo. Well, he's a troll, a nice troll. Scandinavian trolls are usually nice. Moomin Troll is his name, and he has a girlfriend called the Snork Maiden, if you were curious about his preferences. His creator, Tove Jonsson, born in 1914 and died early this century, was a Swedish-speaking Finn. There are not too many Finnish houses that would lack Moomin mugs, tea towels, trays and toys. What makes Tove so different from iconic English children's fiction writers like Rowling and Blyton? This photo is our first hint. It shows how attractive she was to both men and women. And it also says no one was going to tell her who to love or not. She was courageous and open in the way she conducted her love life, and a bit busy too. Later, she met a sculptor and lived with her till death did them part. Tuulikki Pietilä turns up in Moomin World as Tuutikki, active, optimistic, interested in all things, knowledgeable, practical and wise. She was a good problem solver. Readers find it hard to make up their minds about the gender of Tuutikki. It's quite ambiguous. There is a great range of amorphous and gender diverse characters in the books. But that's not what makes her characters so different from those in English children's fiction. The big difference is the presence of parents. Tuva doesn't have to toss the kids into boarding school or a gypsy caravan for a holiday jaunt across the moor to give the kids some space. Everyone is autonomous. Everyone is free to have adventures and express themselves. There are foolish, pompous characters, inhibited and extroverted ones. She drew these characters from her own family, surprise, surprise. But there was only one truly ominous one, and that was the Groak. The uninvited, freezing presence that sucks the joy she is lacking herself from living and loving. In our period of quiet time today, I invite you to reflect on the children in your life. Do you make it easy for them to find their authentic identities? Do you accept their expression? Do you help them to become confident, competent, independent little human beings? I'll start and end the quiet time with the bell, after which you'll hear Brendan. You may have noticed that we have not done candles of concern today, and that's because we've reserved that for just one candle. It's a candle for a very loving father and husband and someone whom we hold very, very dear. So we'll continue our period of silence, and I'll light a candle for Clive Brooks. In 2019, we had our first service advertised in Feast with a focus on LGBT issues. A panel of speakers shared thoughts and stories from different perspectives: L for lesbian, G for gay, B for bisexual, and T for transgender. For 10 years, those labels had been in common parlance, but others were encroaching. The acronym keeps expanding. Last year, the New York Times published an updated article, The ABCs of LGBTQIA+. And this year, we're going to start off with my fave, which is Q. Q has become much more popular this century. Some insist that it stands for questioning, representing people who are uncertain of their sexual orientations or uncertain of their gender identities. Others declare it's Q for queer, a catch-all term that's shed its derogatory origins and is gaining acceptance. You may hear the term genderqueer, used to describe someone who exhibits both traditionally masculine and feminine qualities, or they may exhibit neither. Even if you haven't heard the term, I'm sure you've all seen people of all ages you would not be confident as identifying as male or female. If you've been nicely brought up, like I was, you will avoid using gender labels and pronouns until you find out what the person wants. And if you haven't fully recovered from being nicely brought up, you may avoid speaking at all, which sadly fuels a toxic expectation of secrecy or denial of any variation from the binary model, boy, girl. The deepest form of despair is to choose to be another than oneself. That was written by Søren Kierkegaard in Sickness Unto Death. Kierkegaard is the philosopher that Rob always used to quote about prayer. I can thoroughly commend reading him. He's wonderful on a lot of topics. Now that brings me to the topic of the day, labels and boxes. Labels are nouns that affirm the existence of things like mother, father, man, woman. Labels can be owned with pride. Gay, lesbian. Prior to the 70s, pride was harder. Most workplaces had a don't ask, don't tell policy. To this day, so-called family values, ethnicity, religion, laws, and the prejudice of neighbours can still make it hard for people to embrace the labels that really suit them. The deepest form of despair is to choose to be an other than oneself. And that brings me to the letter I. The intersex community is a recent phenomenon, not because the condition is new, but because of the shame and secrecy surrounding it. You are no doubt familiar with the biological and somewhat bookish term hermaphrodite. Technically, it's a synonym for intersex, but it has derogatory connotations, probably evolving from the travelling freak shows of the 19th century and also last century. They weren't banned until 1980, but you could argue they still exist. For example, the British television show Extraordinary People. The catch is one person's freak show is another person's portrayal of heroic triumph over medical adversity. So you might watch this wretched television show with a tear in your eye, or you might watch it with your jaw crashing to the floor. Either way, using the term hermaphrodite for human beings is dodgy. It's been used to dehumanise for too long. I'm going to recommend a film called Intersection, which is available on YouTube. Even the 2-minute trailer gives you a bit of an insight.
She giggled.
My parents were told they should just take me home, dress me in yellow and green, give me a nickname, and wait to see.
You know, it's not just male, it's not just female. I'm intersex.
Sorry, society, because it would have been so simple if it was just male and female. But you're going to have to change your mind now.
Intersex! Yeah, yeah, yeah!
Intersex isn't uncommon, it's just unheard of.
Doctors became increasingly aggressive to try to make sure that everybody looked clearly male or looked clearly female. There was this real authoritativeness about this is what we do for these children.
I had more than a dozen surgeries before I was 10.
They decided to remove my clitoris because it was too big for a normal girl.
All my parents' friends that I remembered from childhood all knew that my parents had a boy who disappeared and then they had a girl and there wasn't any explanation.
There's two entries, one that says, nice wee lad, and another one that says, sex determined as female.
I was told to pass as a boy, I was taught to strive to be as boy-like as possible. It's absurd, I can't measure up to being male.
People treated me like a freak. They cut me up. They harmed me in ways that prevent me from being romantically or sexually intimate with people.
I'm very angry at the genitals that were taken away from me.
We have created this cycle of, oh my God, we have to fix it, shame it, hide it. And then there's another intersex birth. You've never talked about the one that might be your neighbor.
I love being intersex. I just wish they didn't fuck with my body so much, you know?
Love your kids that are different. There's lots of us that don't fit the two standard boxes.
I am different because I was born different. And you are different because you was born different.
I mean, I do cross the female box when I have to choose one, but my body isn't female.
There's more to being a man or a woman than just a genital. People have genitals. People are not genitals. I know that's hard to believe because we've all met a lot of pricks in our lives.
Well, that was totally amazing. John and I spent hours trying to get both video and sound this week and thought, oh, no, it's not going to happen. And it just worked for the first time today. Somebody's on my side, I think. The point about the intersex label, it's different to the other letters because it doesn't identify either your sexual identity like T does, or your preference, like L and G do. It simply indicates that the person has genitals, hormone levels, or chromosome patterns, or gonads, that don't conform to the standard male and female models. When we're conceived, we're not differentiated. We don't instantly have ovaries and testes, or indeed other visible external features until rather later on. Some intersex people are identified at birth, but many are not. There are at least 30 conditions that lead to intersex. Well, why does it matter? It's the medical practice. That's why it matters. John Money of the prestigious John Hopkins School of Medicine in Maryland, which is still possibly the prime research university in America in that field, he maintained that nurture trumps nature. I can only apologise for that verb. He advised parents, He advised parents, if a child didn't have a vagina or a penis or had a too smaller one, to have it all fixed surgically. And then you bring them up as a boy or a girl and they would behave normally and feel normal because you'd be given hormone injections. And no mention was to be made of their actual condition. Well, the assumption came badly unstuck. Adult intersex people report repetitive, irreversible surgeries, countless genital examinations, pain, incontinence, hormones that don't work, mental suffering, loss of sexual sensation, and permanent infertility, but above all, a sense of betrayal. The happiest people featured in the Intersection documentary were the two who had escaped imposed treatment. Many parts of the United States of America are still acting as if God makes mistakes that have to be fixed. Activism is raging. In Australia, the debate is less fueled by religious fundamentalism. We were the first country to have a parliamentary inquiry into involuntary or coerced medical interventions. We were the first to have a known public office bearer who was openly intersex. Tony Briffa has a third gender passport. These aren't available in many countries in the world. He had to marry in New Zealand, though, because in Australia, marriage was between a man and a woman to the exclusion of all others. That was the Howard tweaking of the law that made that a bit tricky. He was raised as a girl and castrated at age 7. And the point is that operation did not normalise her. It was the rationale that doctors presented to her mother. Tony lived as a woman for 30 years, then as a man, now as neither. In public office 7 years ago, Tony requested people not use he and she pronouns. The Shire reacted courteously. On marriage, Tony vowed to be the best husband and wife possible. As of 2020, Tony accepts both he and she. He, she, they're both right, he says. Rejects being described as transgender and embraces the label Q. If you consult the Wikipedia, Australia is good now for marriage. So somebody in that position wouldn't have the same problems, they'd be able to marry. We're also good for third gender or sex classification. You can change that on vital documents. You can access identification documents, but we don't yet fully protect intersex people from discrimination. We're a bit weak on equal rights, and we don't deliver protection of physical integrity and bodily autonomy. Bioethicists, Intersex Human Rights Australia and other advocacy groups, surgeons and Senate committees are all working on it, but we've got a way to go. The more labels we find, the more we need. That's if the aim is inclusivity. Is it any surprise that A has been added? A is for ace or asexual, people who are not attracted to others, people who would rather connect with the book that John read earlier, I Don't Like Kisses. Even so, even with all those labels we've mentioned, there would be people here in this room who might fail to embrace any labels and just prefer the plus sign designation. Something else. We know that a label on a box doesn't define the contents. Labels affirm the existence of diversity. Labels have helped break the perception that there are only two genders. Labels draw our attention to the distinction between a person's gender identity and who they're attracted to. But labels have shortcomings. If you tell me you're heterosexual, you're not telling me much, are you? My dad was one of them. He had little in common with Oliver Reed or Christian Porter. Alone, the LGBTQIA labels don't define individuals. You won't find a box of clones anywhere. My mother read the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus and pitched it rather savagely aside. Dad was the touchy-feely one in our family and Mum could read maps and just go and get stuff done while he faffed about. But the assumptions in the book really annoyed her at quite a visceral level. She didn't just disagree with the book, it offended her. It framed her and Dad as abnormal. And people get offended by being misgendered or irritated by assumptions about their own or their children's abilities, attributes, and interests. Our first Unitarian principle is that we respect the inherent worth and dignity of every person. I always found that one harder during Clipsal race in March. My nephew has a bit of a battle with a Buddhist precept in face of Trump supporters. And we wriggle out of dilemmas by this by saying things like, oh, well, to each his own, or that's all part of life's rich tapestry. But that is a patronising and totally inadequate way of dealing with your kids, your friends, your workmates, or your neighbours if, for example, they confide in you that they're asexual or gay or trans. We need a bit of a roadmap to live up to our better selves. Another Unitarian, Val Webb, passed on to me some years ago the Four Agreements. They are principles you agree to put in your own daily life to reduce suffering. They're very simple. Be impeccable with your word. Don't take things personally. Don't make assumptions and do your best. Now, be impeccable with your word means to say what you mean and not make jokes and remarks for the sake of a laugh or for social approbation. It doesn't mean you can't joke. It just adds a layer of quality control, a little awareness of audience, the need for a bit of framing. Now, don't take things personally is not a principle you apply to others when you say something that you shouldn't have and they attack you. It's what you do when a remark makes you feel diminished. Instead of reacting as if the offence was intentional, you apply the benefit of the doubt. You may ask a question or two to ascertain what was intended and whether it comes from a place of malice or ignorance. If it is malice, you can reflect that the insult tells them more about them than it does about you. The point of not taking things personally is that it can create a bit of space for a more strategic response. Think of returning shots at tennis. You're in a better position if your opponent cannot just expect an instant sharp return. And this segues nicely into don't make assumptions. This is totally key in relationships generally, and rather than expand on this, I would like to break off my monologue for a little impromptu small group discussion. You don't need to shift. You can turn around, just chat to neighbours. You may shift if you want to, but I'd like you to share anecdotes about assumptions, things people may have assumed about you just because of your appearance or your role or maybe your job, or even better, when you've made assumptions about someone else on the basis of their appearance or stereotypes, what makes you slam on the brakes and change direction in your opinion about somebody and change your relation with that person? So I hope those little prompts there are handy and we'll just have a little 5-minute break, talk among yourselves, okay? Thank you. Order in the court. The judge is eating beans. His wife is in the bathtub counting submarines. Well, that sounded productive. Obviously, we've got a lot of experience of assumptions. The last agreement was do your best. Now, there are some caveats to that. You don't confuse this with being the best that you can be, which is the theme of many an American movie, isn't it? You can only ask of yourself to do your best given the conditions of the environment and of yourself, and your best does not equate with success or perfection. Now, a little story, no names. A woman manages a choir of girls. They're about to go on music camp. She gets a phone call, and to her surprise, she finds out that one of the little girls isn't a cisgender child. I say surprise, perhaps I should have said gobsmacked, because the girl in question is a lovely little musical girl. She's not even a tomboy, but she is transgender. She'd transgendered in year four. She'd left her boyhood behind and enrolled in her new school with a new name. The education department had cleaned up the paper trail so a stray services officer or teacher wouldn't come across a record of a gender change. Now, the mother was anxious about privacy before the camp. The strategy used was to get all the girls going on camp together beforehand and have a little chat with them about having to share a bedroom and bathrooms. Lots of girls worried about being barged in on in the toilet or the shower, and no one wanted to undress in front of anyone else. There followed a discussion about the practicalities of respecting each other's privacy. A code was agreed upon, including knocking on doors and asking, "May I come in, or do you still need a moment?" You may recall at the beginning of this address, I talked about the corrosive effects of enforced secrecy on intersex kids. In an ideal world, transgender kids shouldn't need to hide. But right now, in this example, this is the best anyone can do to respect the autonomy of the child and the choices the family had made. I was very impressed to hear how cooperative and responsible a government department was. I was pleased to hear the strategy worked and not altogether surprised that the little girl needed a teacher present to get to sleep. But she's not on her own there. We've all sat with kids who were finding a night sleeping away from home hard. Doing your best detaches the action from the reward. It means you can come to enjoy the action without expecting any external prize. So, for example, if you take on the challenge of calling people by their preferred pronouns and you get it bang on right all the time, don't expect a medal. And if you stuff up, don't self-flagellate or grovel. You will avoid self-judgment and regret and self-praise if you have done your best. I like that little quote, "Do the best you can until you know better, then when you know better, do better." I'm going to ask people to stand now for the benediction. This is Maya Angelou, an American poet who I just quoted, and I've found a little more of her writing that's very good. "I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. Without courage, you cannot practice any other virtue with consistency. We can't be kind, true, merciful, generous, and honest. If you're always trying to be normal, you will never know how amazing you can be. And to add my benediction, may you treasure compassion and courage and follow your own path, no matter how singular."
enjoy this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.